So it's Monday, Earth Day. I've put out an episode yesterday, I want to say. The what now, like my current wrestling journey. And I don't think I had any intention of recording anytime soon. Probably not till the next weekend. And that was probably with the rewatch series. You know, I've taken a break only because it was WrestleMania week. And I don't know. You know, I felt a certain kind of way. I didn't really want to do much creativity wise. So, anyway, I'm back at it. Probably today I'm going to release my first match with Eddie Atlas. He went either by Eddie Atlas or Eddie Craven, but one of my dear friends in the industry, especially at that time. And it's like our first one-on-one matchup, I think, ever. And it's on PCW television, and it's kind of a shift for me as far as character goes, even though it's like I'd only been there a few weeks, I think, at that point. But it was definite shift, and Eddie was always such a great guy to work with, and really, look, this rewatch series has been something. And I'm wanting to fully embrace it and be as transparent when I do the companion pieces. And so I thought, well, if I'm going to be truly transparent, I feel that I need to discuss this disorder that I have. Now, I'm going to take you back to when I got diagnosed. Because up until that point, and I think up until recently, I just really didn't pay attention to what the diagnosis was. Because at the time I was just, at a breaking point, I want to say. Now, we're going back about almost 30 years. So, I don't recall it ever being this extreme. Maybe not since my childhood. Some of the things that would happen. But this was fairly extreme. At the time, I was serving my country. I was in the Navy. I was aboard an aircraft carrier. I was doing like message traffic, but I was, you know, an E3. So in essence, I was also doing galley work. I wasn't sleeping a lot. I was in a constant mode of stress. I think once I got stationed with my squadron and whatnot, and maybe even a little bit before that, the reality of my situation for me and the impact that it would have on my mind was starting to come out in many certain extreme ways. For instance, I would get so anxious. I'd be so filled with thoughts that my body would tense up to the point and my senses would get so heightened that I would pass out. I'd always felt like I was a pretty cool customer for the most part. You know, I handled things fairly well, but I was a, you know, hot-tempered kid at the same time and could have a short fuse and all this stuff, right? But I'd done pretty well in basic, and they looked at me as a guy who had potential and all the things, right? But I think aboard that aircraft carrier, it all came to a head, and I started having issues where I'd pass out. My body would just get, and I couldn't recognize what was going on aside from it would just be this heightened sense. Everything would be overwhelming. It would be like the world would be a dim really dim, and all of a sudden, like, this bright light, noises, just all kinds of things, all kinds of sensations hitting me, all at the same time, and my brain would be like, all right, we're going to check out, and I check out, and I wouldn't know for how long necessarily. I want to say on a couple occasions, fellow shipmates found me. I think I was on watch at one point and they found me. And on top of that, I was having suicidal thoughts. And not something I discussed when I was serving, because I knew that that would lead to a completely different conversation that I wasn't wanting to have. And the truth was that if I could, I don't know. You know, I didn't know what I didn't want to tell them something that could derail it, but I knew I needed some form of help. I knew that, like, even on the ship, I was in crisis mode. And to be honest, we were not at war at this time. But my brain took my situation and saw it as, I would often refer to my time in the service as serving jail time. And that's a tough, you know, it's tricky how the brain works, but that's, even talking about it, I have these sensations, you know, right now, like, oh my God, you know, everything's super tense. I'm trying to be like, no, man, you're good. We're good. We're just talking about it. We're not there. But being there, the amount of, at the time I didn't realize the trauma that I was going through, but it was hugely traumatic because, again, I would pass out, I'd wake up, I'd be disoriented, I wouldn't know what was going on. Again, I had these suicidal thoughts. And it was just so tough. When I got diagnosed, the diagnosis also came with, well, you know, you're going to need to seek help. But the truth is, this is probably a lifelong thing you're going to be going through. A lifelong thing. So, before I continue, as I'm doing these deliveries and whatnot, and en route, I'm going to try to look this up. This is the time where I wish I really did have, like, an Apple Vision so I could drive and also have, didn't have to necessarily pull it up on my phone. I know this isn't safe, but, yeah, so let me look that up real quick. I already got the page pulled up. So, borderline personality disorder. This is basically what I was diagnosed with, and it made a lot of sense once I really delved into it. A mental disorder characterized by unstable moods, behavior, and relationships. Cause of borderline personality disorder isn't well understood. Diagnosis is made based on symptoms. Symptoms include emotional instability, feelings of worthlessness, insecurity, impulsivity, and impaired social relationships. Treatments include talk therapy or, in some cases, medications. Hospitalization helps if symptoms are severe. Some of the causes are environmental, cultural, and social factors. Many people with BPD report experiencing traumatic life events such as abuse, abandonment, or hardship during childhood. Others may have been exposed to unstable, invalidating relationships or conflicts. Lastly, some of the diagnoses, people with BPD have extreme mood swings, unstable relationships, and trouble controlling their emotions. They have a higher risk of suicide and self-destructive behavior. Talk therapy is the main treatment for BPD. So, that in a nutshell is what I was going through at the time. Very extreme thing. And, you know, the service, I don't want to say, hey, they cut me loose. Because the truth is, they weren't aware of how bad it was, aside from the passing out. And that just seemed like a detriment to, you know, war, you know, if there was a wartime scenario and I'm passing out, not better, you know, wouldn't benefit anybody. So, I got honorably discharged, kind of sent on my way. I kind of signed a, you know, signed paperwork that was like, y'all don't owe me anything. I don't owe y'all anything. I probably won't ever talk about this experience aside from when I'm doing a job interview and they want to say, oh, you served, and leave it at that. And then at times they don't even have to ask that because the paperwork shows that I'm honorably discharged and whatnot. And they kind of sent me on my way. And I struggled because I didn't explain to my parents what was going on. I came home to Corpus after the diagnosis. I drove from Whidbey Island, Washington State to Corpus during El Nino. Like, I hit Oregon without, in the midst of a snowstorm, without snow tires. I was driving this little Toyota Tercel. Great car. Got me home. I had always had bouts of insomnia or fighting sleep, and my body would just shut down at some point. I stayed in my room a lot, and I think my folks probably presumed I was just sad because I got discharged. You know, this was supposed to kind of help me find my place in life, I guess, give me a good skill. You know, they didn't pass judgment necessarily, but they didn't really know what was going on. And I didn't tell anybody. I didn't go seek therapy. I didn't go to VA. I didn't try to get any help. What I presumed was, okay, this thing, it was just a heightened situation, that's, you know, it's just a lesson of what stress can do to the body, and I need to really learn ways of expelling this excess energy, because that's basically what it is, and find ways to be productive with it. And then within a couple of years, I found wrestling. I think within 2 years, probably within 2 years of being, almost to the day, within 2 years of being discharged and starting my journey home to Corpus, within 2 years, I was taking my first few bumps at CTPW's wrestling school off Burnett in Austin, Texas, and a little warehouse that I grew to love, and wrestling gave me all the outlet from a physicality standpoint. You know, taking those bumps, man, it takes a whole lot out of you. Being able to showcase a personality and, you know, not necessarily be myself, create a persona that could be all the things that I wasn't and could hide all the things that I struggled with. And again, I didn't have to tell anyone what I was diagnosed with, because I was far removed from the service. You know, I didn't have to explain what was going on. You know, that wonderful honorable discharge eliminates a lot of questions. And I welcome not having to answer any of those questions, because even 30 years, you know, has passed nearly, and I still, you know, I get into a mode in my brain, and it's, oh man, you're there. And I have to tell myself, no. And it's still a process to calm down. The beauty of my time in wrestling was that, for the most part, I was the DeMarco side of my persona. I was living, breathing that persona, and it allowed me not to have to face what this disorder was causing. A lot of suicidal thoughts, a lot of the despair, the depression, the anxiety, the uncontrollable rage over God knows, it could be anything. And when it would show up in my relationships, I just presumed that I was just passionate. That I was totally fine. That, oh yeah, I'm anxious and I'm depressed and yeah, I have these thoughts, but man, that's not me. But before that, let's get into, because I think it's important for me to explain where I think it all stemmed from. And realistically, it stemmed from my childhood. Some of my earliest memories, one of my earliest memories was waking up in a house. I was maybe four or five. I couldn't give you the exact age, but it was about 4 or 5. Me and my baby sister, who's about a year younger than me, we were in this house. I wake up. I kind of have a bad dream. I wake up screaming. Nobody comes to see if I'm all right. So then I know something's wrong. And I look around the house. Can't find my bio dad or my stepmom. I go, I want to say, I get my, some of it's a little hazy, but I remember just feeling completely abandoned at that point. And and panicking because I'm a little kid. We're by ourselves. I go to a neighbor's. It's late at night. They take good care of me until my folks get home. When I get home, I think there are police cars, and my bio dad and stepmom are none too happy because we've apparently disappeared. They don't know what happened to us, even though they weren't there. And for that, dealing with the panic that I've been going through, the real sense of abandonment that I was fearing, again, I'm 4 or 5. Like, why leave us unattended? Because we're asleep? Like, I think they went drinking or something. Again, I don't know what they were doing. I just know they weren't there. But for that situation, because, you know, cops were called and whatnot, I guess they felt I was to blame. And so I was punished severely for it at the behest of my stepmom. And she made my dad be the one to, or my bio dad be the one to do the honors, I guess. Even though she had beat me on a couple of occasions and left me unconscious at one point. But these are the emotions that I had. And I've talked about it before, you know, previous episodes. So, but that said, that fear of abandonment, the panic, the fact that I would fight sleep from that point forward, I think, you know, because I didn't want to close my eyes, especially after being knocked unconscious. The last thing I would want to do is be unconscious. So for years, I would fight it. You know, my parents, my mom, bio mom, but my mom and my stepdad or the dude, as I playfully like to call him, because he's the coolest dude I know, you know, just assumed I just had a lot of energy. And at some point when I would crash, if I could crash, I would sleep pretty well, you know. But it was rough, you know, as a kid. And also, you know, so those are, that's my earliest, those were a few of my earliest memories of, like, these traumatic events, you know, getting my finger disfigured at the hands of my father, accidentally, but still, you know, still nonetheless, like, because they didn't want me peeking into their conversation, they slam a door, and my finger happens to be where the door and the frame meet, and it's a big, you know, they slam the door, and it breaks my finger and disfigures it. My, on my left hand, I, my pointer finger is always been disfigured. If you ever look at it, you probably don't notice it, but my tip of my fingers, but again, I think that's, you know, I'm pretty clear that those few instances, you know, my mom not being there at one point, being there and then not being there, but I have always tried to just go, well, they were doing the best they could. I try to rationalize it, justify it. I don't justify my bio dad and my stepmom's behavior towards me, the names that I would be called, the treatment that I received, the fact that my life was in danger, the fact that my grandmother on more than one occasion has saved my life. That I am totally blessed for. And I only wish she was here to hear this. But that disorder, well, probably beneficial in wrestling, you know, again, to want to do that business, to want to take bumps, to want to put your body at risk, that's a, you know, that's a high risk. At any point you'd get injured. But I embraced it, and I embraced all that it brought. The one thing that the wrestling couldn't cover up was how I dealt with stuff in relationships or interpersonal relationships, any kind of relationship, friendships, you know, romantic, non-romantic, platonic, sexual, casual, acquaintance, non-acquaintance, you know, business associate, teammate, whatever you want to call it. This thing, I hate to say a thing, right? You know, you're supposed to refer to stuff like this as like your superpower. In many ways, it is my superpower. You know, it is, it has helped in many ways. It has guided me in many ways. So it's not totally terrible, but I do know it doesn't do me any favors in any relationships, because I know for a fact at times I can get fixated on a phrase or a word or an interaction with someone, and that will dictate the relationship in its totality. Case in point, I dated this girl for a very long time, but at the beginning of us, kind of like the courtship portion of the relationship, when we're trying to get to know each other and it's fairly casual at this point, she makes a comment, and it's a throwaway comment. If I look back at it now, of all the things she said, this is probably the throwaway, a flirtatious comment meant to be in jest. She's like, "Don't get sweet on me." My brain took that phrase, and legitimately, that was the directive. Moving forward, for the totality of our relationship, and we dated for years, I was always like, well, I'm never going to get too sweet on her. It's never going to be too sweet. It's never going to be even totally sweet. You're never going to get that. You're going to get all the other stuff, but you're not going to get the sweet, because you don't want me to get sweet on you. Now, if someone was relaying this to me and we were close and, like, I felt I could be frank with them, I'd be like, you know, totally blunt with them and say, man, that's a fucked up way to look at it. Like, how was the rest of the relationship? Oh, it was great. You know, on many levels, some of it could, you know, I could take or leave, but, you know, it was a drama-filled relationship, but it probably started with that because my brain got fixated on that. And it's, man. And that's one example, and not like one that I can count on a hand, you know, just a handful of examples. No, you know, almost every interaction at some point, there's a, okay, something I'm going to get fixated on, sometimes for the best, sometimes for the good. I could have a very good experience with someone and be like, regardless of what anyone else thinks, well, at this particular time, this particular core memory, they were like this with me, and therefore, in my book, they're totally fine. Doesn't matter. And not that that's healthy, because, hey, man, interactions, you know, things, people move, they evolve, this, that, the other, and yet here I am, like, I can get fixated on a early interaction or a late interaction. I can get sour to things, but again, if I get fixated, and it's hard to, while in real time, it is tough. I would probably, even when I was, because I would say, oh, that's, like, in this case, oh, okay, that's why I'm reacting the way I'm reacting. I couldn't stop it. Couldn't stop it. And it would infuriate me to no end, you know, because I couldn't, you know, like no matter what I would try, techniques that I had learned over the years, therapists that I had talked to, and again, without telling them, hey, by the way, let me open this by telling you that I have borderline personality disorder. I was diagnosed back in 1998, and therefore, here's where I'm coming from, because I would just tell them, well, I'm depressed, I'm anxious, and I'm suicidal. And sometimes I wouldn't even tell them I'm suicidal, because that's not something you want to talk about. Even the depression and anxiety, I'd just be like, I have bouts of it, but I can work through it. I always tell myself I can work through it. The moment that I would be told, hey, we want to prescribe you something, I'd be like, eh, I'm out. I didn't want to be balanced I didn't want to be like even keel. I felt, especially as a performer, especially within the industry that I was in, that this disorder, for lack of a better term, was beneficial, because again, I didn't talk about the disorder, so I just said, well, I'm depressed and anxious, and wrestling kind of keeps that at bay, keeps the suicidal thoughts at bay, and you know, because I can be DeMarco 24/7 if I need to be. As long as I'm in a wrestling context dealing with any other wrestlers, I will be DeMarco, which he doesn't have this disorder. If anything, he's ultra confident, zen-like, you know, charismatic to a fault, and people like him. All the opposites of what I felt, you know, as Steve. You build that persona. And so if I could be that guy, and, you know, that would benefit me. So I didn't have to address it. And if I had outbursts and such, well, I'm just being passionate, I'm just super intense, you know, or, oh, well, you told me, you know, that, you know, you told me not to be sweet on you, like in that instance. But again, it even goes with even interpersonal dialogue I have with myself, you know, where it's, case in point, when it comes to working out, right? I'd start and stop so many programs, and in large part, once I fell off the routine that it was designed to have, after a few days, I'd be like, all right, got to start over. So might as well start back up on Monday. That has been a common theme of mine, a common credo of mine, a common, you know, me telling myself, like, eh, just, you know, you'll start back up on Monday, and Monday will come, and I'll have, by that point, looked at probably the program and gone, wow. Or, if it's, say, DDPY, for instance, And let's say I'm doing a normal program, I'm doing intermediate level. Okay, it's 2 to 3 workouts a week. Oh man, that's not enough. I've got to work out every day. I'm so far behind. No, well then I need to add this portion to it. I need to do this. I need to do this. And by the time I'm ready to even put that I'm going to start the program, I've already overwhelmed myself to the point of like, oh man, that's too much. I don't want to do that. That's a lot. I haven't even started. Or if I start, I'm like, am I doing enough? Well, let's tack more stuff on. And then I overwhelm myself and I'm back to, well, I'll start back up Monday. That's been a common thing for me as of late. Where, you know, I got this piriformis syndrome. I've had it for the last few weeks. It's finally starting to feel better. I'm like, all right, once it's feeling totally better, I'm going to get started on this program. And I find myself still doing it as I'm like, don't do that. You know, just focus on the program. You do well, just get started. If you miss a day, who cares? Just get started. You're going to feel better. And yet that internal dialogue, well, yeah, but am I doing enough? God, what if I want to start, you know, and then it becomes that. What if? And I overwhelm myself to the point of, it's Monday. Am I going to start the program? Probably not. Will I start on Tuesday? Maybe, but I want to do a specific program. So now, oh, well, it's a 6-day-a-week program. Do I really, you know, and again, it becomes that. Because I do want to do some level of resistance training. And so this is how my brain is. And again, to anyone that has, to my loved ones, that I don't talk to them about this. That I could put this out here on here, and yet for years I wouldn't talk about this. Even to myself, I wouldn't journal about it, wouldn't any of it. I didn't want to bring it up. It wasn't until really recently where it's like I have these emotions. What do I do with it? How do I, you know, cope with it? Or how do I make it work for me? How do I not get so overwhelmed? How can I, like, you know, ease the valve a little bit so that, you know, if I'm not training, what can I do mentally to kind of snap me out of some of this? Again, I don't talk to my wife about it, really, and it's ironic I don't talk to her because when we were dating or just friends, she was always my sounding board. She was always the person I would confide in. She should be the one I'm talking to about this. But it's hard to discuss it. I can discuss it on here because there is no feedback. There's no one chiming in while I'm just kind of, you know, talking about it. And if that's the treatment, then this is all I need to do is talk about it. Let it out. Let people know, hey, look, this is what I'm going through. If I was ever a certain way, this is one of the reasons why. This is at my core. It's sadly latched on to my core. And all I hear is that there is no treatment for it that's going to subside it. You can do things, but you're always going to deal with it. That's, you know, like, oh, this is a lifelong thing? Oh man, let's hope that I don't have a bad moment and think that this is it, which has happened. And I've had to, like, nope. When I have morbid thoughts, no, I do it out loud. Nope. You're not going to win today. Not those thoughts. And it's hard enough to tell someone you love or to share it with people that are really, really close to you as they're watching you explain it. Because the last thing I want to do is either make someone feel like as hopeless as I feel at times. You know, because I'm like, oh, it's a never-ending thing. It's something I'm always facing. It's why I have suicidal thoughts. It's why I'm anxious. It's why I'm depressed. It's why I don't feel worth. There are plenty of days where I will be done with a shift and have to fight the urge to be like, man, I'm a complete failure. And not because, hey, my home life, because that's the thing too. If I have this conversation with my wife, I don't want her to be like, well, you're just not happy with what portion of it. And it's like, no, I came into this with this mentality to where I've always said my biggest critic, my biggest bully, my biggest, the biggest detractor is me. To myself is me. There's not anything someone else can say that will dictate how I feel about myself more than what I tell myself. And that probably goes for a whole slew of people. But it sucks. It sucks terribly when you're like, no. I don't want you to think that, no, I'm blessed. I look at my life and go, man, I am blessed when I wake up. I'm blessed when I go to sleep. I'm blessed that I made it through another day. I'm blessed because I have this family. All members of it. All members of my very small, intimate inner circle, right? You know, that the people that have been around me, stuck by me, that, hey, it doesn't matter if I'm at a wrestling show. They reach out on a constant. We check in on each other on a constant. And yet, I don't always have someone to talk to aside from the device that I'm currently speaking into. And I have found that it has been beneficial to just, if I'm feeling a certain kind of way, just to put it out in an audio recording or just record it. Journal it in this way, because I can do that at this point. I'm trying to make sense of it. But it feels pretty senseless at times. And again, to feel like, oh, this is a lifelong thing that I'm going to always go through. I'm always going to have this thing. I know what will happen to me if I'm at a certain mental point. I know how bad it can get. And I'm, oh man, all right. So I constantly try to be in a state of like optimism. I try to combat this and try to be as optimistic as humanly possible with that everything will work out. I try not to beat myself up too much. I have tried to shift my mentality from the idea of like, oh man, I suck. I just did not do enough today, to be like, man, you got out of bed. No. You put in the work. You did, you know, you did an honest day. You're doing as much as you can. Be as present as humanly possible. And the problem is with being as present as humanly possible is that those thoughts that I have aren't just there when I'm by myself. They're not just there when I'm by myself in a car. They're not just there when I'm by myself, you know, when I have a moment to myself. They are there all the time. And it is a constant bombardment of that. And it is tiring, and it is taxing, and it is exhausting to fight it. And there are days where in moments where I just do not want to fight it. I don't want to put anyone through it. Because when there's a shift in my brain and I fixate on things and I get too overwhelmed, too, you know, wrapped up in whatever it is that's going on, and I can't shake it, and I can tell that my mood is such. I've been very cognizant of it, of the energy that I can put out, because I always remind myself of what they told me in the NICU when it comes to newborns, or when it comes to kids in general. They're very empathic. What energy you give off is the energy that they're gonna have. And I knew in the hospital I couldn't show fear or super concern. I had to radiate like positive. Like, this kid's gonna make it. He's gonna exceed all the things. He's gonna check off all the boxes. He's gonna be totally healthy. And when I parent, it's the same thing. I want to coddle this little dude, and I want to be like, nothing's gonna hurt you. You're never gonna go through what I went through. Not for a moment. No one's ever gonna talk to you a certain way. No one's gonna treat you a certain way. You're gonna have whatever you want to do, bud. Let's do it. But I fear. I don't want anyone to go through what I go through. And I don't want to put anyone through what I go through and what the byproduct of my conflict is. Now, and this is where the wrestling portion comes into play, I don't have that outlet, really. I don't have that that place, really. And so, you know, the last few years have been exceptionally tough because I don't have the outlet necessarily. Now, I could say, okay, well, you know, doing yoga and meditating while I'm doing yoga, and you know, now this power cuffs routine, okay, you know, that's going to be an outlet. And no, I've got creative outlets. I'm doing the rewatch series, and you know, I can put out content, and I can say my piece, and you know, people listen to it, awesome. And if they don't, you know, hey, it doesn't matter, because at least I'm getting it out of my brain, and I'm purging some of you know, if it's any kind of negative thoughts, I'm purging those. But still, this is a daily struggle. And it ain't ending anytime soon. So, living with it. And I've done a bulk of therapy, and at times we don't get to the root of it. I'm just trying to get through whatever current crisis I would be going through at the time. But I did find therapy helpful only in the way of, like, I just wanted to speak, feel like I was being heard. And when that wouldn't happen, I would disconnect with whoever it was. And I felt more relief either journaling or blogging or, again, talking into my phone and recording it. And that, finding a way how to work through it. For one, I don't have the extra funds to really devote to a lifelong endeavor that may not have a solution, or at least a solution that I want to hear. I know there are things that I can do to alleviate some of it, but I've dismissed therapy for a long time because of that exact reason. I hit a big block, a big wall when it comes to it. I don't want to be prescribed something necessarily. And again, if it's just, hey, getting it off my chest, well, I can do that in this, through this means. That means, hey, if people want to listen to it, great. And if they don't, hey, I've said it. I've said my piece. If someone wants to discuss it with me, I'm willing to discuss it. But realize that there's a lot to trigger me within that discussion. And it's a lot of stuff to navigate. It's not easy. Not for me. What I would tell anyone who is dealing with someone with it, at least what for me, a lot of times what I want is just comfort, to know someone's there and that I'm being heard. A lot of times that's all I'm aiming for. That's all I'm wanting. The harder I push someone away, the more I'm desperately wanting them to stick around. Because it's in my nature to make things unstable. Sadly to say, it's in my nature is part of the problem. That it's at my core, that it's much like my piriformis syndrome. It's my bundle of nerves, my core, are being surrounded and inflamed by this inflamed psyche. And times it's hard to get through the knots that have been collecting in my brain, so to speak, to find some level of relief. And so it manifests itself in those ways. You know, physically it'll manifest itself. And sometimes mentally I'll check out, I'll disassociate. And those would be the times where if I look like that and I don't seem totally present, to try to not force the present to make me present, but to guide me to become present and aware that I'm not wherever I'm at that is dictating this thing. It's been quite the journey. You know, if I really look back, I've been dealing with this for almost 45, 46 years. And it continues to manifest itself. It continues to put a wrench in things. It continues to be a hard part to deal with. But I am dealing with it in my own way. And if that means, hey, I'll just journal more audio-wise, if it means, hey, you know, okay, maybe I do need to go talk to someone and someone help me try to figure out better ways of navigating through it. Because when it becomes overwhelming, I do hopefully a good enough job of isolating myself from it, from people, so that I can deal with it. But I know that's not totally healthy either, because there are people that need me, that depend on me, that count on me, that I want to depend on me and to count on me, because I love them with such intensity, and I just want the best for them. I think this is a step towards, sadly, I still have in my brain, I'm never going to totally heal. It's so deep-rooted. That I may never escape it. And it's that hopelessness that I wish I could get past. I wish I could find a way to not think that way. But no matter how optimistic, it's always there. I really wish I could put like a positive spin. I could say, hey, it's going to get better. Because that, the optimistic side of me, that's what they would want to say. That I hope it's going to get better. And that that hope, that optimism is going to lead to something grand, and I'm not going to be inflicted by this for the totality of my life. I appreciate everyone who has come through my life, and I appreciate all of you that have had to deal with these elements or continue to deal with them, because I know it could be a lot. And if you're one of those that's listening to this and wants to discuss it, or you know of someone who's going through this, I can't tell you how to handle them. Maybe ask them. But if, with me, if I look like I'm pushing too hard, if I look like I'm trying to nudge you out of it, if I'm being distant, close that distance. Embrace me. Literally. Try to embrace me. Especially if we're close like that. Because that's probably all I want, is to be heard, to know I'm loved, to know that person's not leaving, even when that's all I think. Well, I love all of y'all for listening. And until the next time, I hope to see you down the road.